and welcome to the Soccer Speakeasy. I'm Mike Arace, joined by Bailey Johnson, our fine crew beat writer. Kyle's in a meeting. We hope he can join us at some point. And of course, at the controls, per usual, is Patrick the Podfather Flaherty. Today is Thursday, the 3rd of November, 2022. It's just after noon as we record this postseason edition of the Speakeasy. You know, I don't know how much you've been watching, Bailey, but it's been quite a tournament.
It has been. I've been watching not tons, but a fair amount, and it has been really interesting.
You know, it's come down to the two top seeds, LAFC and Philadelphia, in the final, MLS Cup final, in LA at Bank of California Stadium. That's Bank with a C, if you're writing it down. That's Saturday, 4 p.m., Fox, Univision, and TUDN. Do they call that TUDN?
I don't know. I actually wondered that the other day.
Well, we'll call it TUDN. That's Fox, Univision, and TUDN, Saturday, 4 p.m., LAFC versus Philadelphia, the two number one seeds from West and East. And that comes at the end of, this will be the fourth round here of a tournament that, you know, on the West side, the seeds held true. In the East, there was only one upset, if you could call it that. And it was a mild one. The defending champions, New York City FC, lost in the second round to... I'm sorry, they beat Montreal, the two seed, 2-3-1 in the second round. But most of the games, there's been a couple, three shootouts in there. Most of the games are of the one goal variety. And there were some, you know, out west, the Western Conference semifinals were El Tráfico and the Battle of Texas with Austin and Dallas. And of course, LAFC beat down Austin in the semis to make it to the finals. Just one other thing I'd add about it. You know, both LA and Philly finished with 67 points. Philly lost the tiebreaker on wins. They had 19 victories to LAFC's 21. Philly also had 10 ties. If they turned two of those into W's, then they win on differential by a lot. They would have won the Supporter Shield and would have had home field in the final. And I looked this up, but only seven of 26 Supporter Shield winners have gone on to win the MLS Cup. Among them, the 2008 Crew. And then in 2009, the Crew won the Supporter Shield and, of course, did not win the MLS Cup. And the last team to win both was Tim Bezbatchenko's Toronto FC team in 2017. So, you know, what is home field advantage in the final? I mean, we shall see. Last year it didn't matter, and we'll see. We'll see this year.
Yeah, I think it would matter a lot more if it was Philadelphia being at home, given that they didn't lose at home all year with them going out to L.A.
Yeah, just imagine just those 10 draws, two of them had flipped, because their goal differential was 46.
Yes.
And LAFC was plus 28. So, you know, it's a shame not to see Austin go through. You know, I know everyone in Columbus was
very, very disappointed to see that, I'm sure.
But a great season by them. But enough about them. Let's, you know, there's one other thing that sort of stuck in my craw as the tournament went on, and that is, and it's nothing new, but the calling of LAFC black and gold. And I get it, they're black and gold, but it's just, you just still never get away from when they tried to steal the team. You know, when Precourt tried to steal the team and take it to Austin, and while that was still all up in the air, LAFC and Nashville come online, and one of them's black and gold, and the other gets banana yellow uniforms, and then they try to actually distribute with ownership capitulation. They try to take the colors out of here subsequent to save the Crew. That stuff is, when I hear LAFC black and gold, it kind of, I don't know, it pisses me off. It's just just one of those things.
Your list of those things grows every year.
Yeah, I know. I guess I'm just a cranky. I just get crankier and crankier.
Yeah, I think so.
Patrick, do I get crankier and crankier? Okay. He's got two thumbs up down there at the end of the studio.
We love you and your crankiness, but it does grow.
I've been picking Philly all season, and I'm gonna stick with them. I'll take the coach and the goalie.
Yeah, I was gonna stick with them as well. So it's kind of boring.
You like Philly winning in LA.
I like Philly winning in LA. I do. I mean, I think the goalie is going to be the difference.
I feel a little cursed. The last time we had a rookie crew B writer making predictions, it was in April of 2019 when Jacob predicted the crew was going to win the Supporter Shield.
I think picking Philly to win MLS Cup 2 days before MLS Cup is a little more sane than that.
Oh, I would agree with you. There's a big sanity upgrade here on the crew beat, let me tell you. Just kidding. It's all in good fun. Okay, crew news. And we'll get to the coaching search in a minute, but we have to do the housework first, since the last time we recorded, I believe, was October 12th.
About
3 weeks ago, and that was just after Caleb Porter was fired.
After Caleb Porter was fired, right? And then a week later, they made their roster decisions.
Right.
So we'll talk about those.
That's what I wanted to get to here. Are the roster decisions? Will you take us through those, Bailey?
Absolutely. There's plenty to talk about with them, but just to give a little bit of a rundown of what they did beforehand.
Let me ask you this very quickly first. Jump in here. I mean, he didn't have to announce his roster, his postseason roster decisions, when he did. He still had a few weeks.
Correct.
What was the reasoning there? Was it the coaching search?
Yeah, I asked about it, and he was a little bit vague. He kind of said, you know, in a normal year, the season would have ended later than it did, so that even if they hadn't made the playoffs, so they would have had less time anyway, but definitely indicated that it was, yes, they wanted to make the decisions they felt confident about right away and then be able to turn their full attention into the coaching search.
Well, there were some decisions that were expected and some that came with a little bit of a jolt.
Absolutely.
And some that might get reversed. Bailey,
correct.
I'll leave it to you here.
Just as a quick refresher to run through the decisions they made, they picked up contract options on goalkeepers Evan Bush and Brady Scott, defenders Jonathan Mensah and Steven Moreira, and midfielders Darlington Nagbe, Luis Diaz, and Isaiah Parente. They declined options on Jaleel Anibaba, Pedro Santos, Eric Hurtado, and James Igbekeme, who was on loan, and they are not going to buy at the end of that loan. And then Derek Etienne and Marlon Harrison are both out of contract. So the big surprise was them declining the option on Pedro Santos, who has been a part of this team for a long time and is beloved by the organization and the fans. That was kind of the number one question people had for Tim Bezbatchenko the day that we spoke with him about it. And he talked at length about the things Pedro did for the crew and how grateful they are for him being in the organization and the way he embraced everything they asked him to do. He just changed positions this past year to go to left back from playing on the wing because that's what they needed him to do. And he was quite good at it. He was one of the best left backs in the league this year. I think he finished fifth in the whole league in tackles won, which for anybody who actually has watched Pedro Santos for a long time knows that physical play is not always something you would say is his number one thing.
A lot of it, he picks a lot of pockets. I mean, he just anticipates well, and he's a good, smart defender, you know, sound.
Absolutely. So that was a surprise. Him and Derek, I would say, were the two big ones. They were both ultimately salary cap decisions as they're trying to have as much room to have some flexibility as they can with whoever the new coach is while still maintaining the core that they believe in. And they're really high on Will Sands coming in at left back to replace Pedro. So they didn't feel that continuing to pay Pedro in the TAM range was something they wanted to do at this point.
Yeah. I mean, Sands needs the minutes now and deserves them.
Absolutely.
I mean, you have to see what you have with him. There's a lot of promise there. As far as Sands goes, this does give him an opportunity to look around because he will get another contract.
Absolutely. He will definitely get another contract. And as Bez kind of left open, there's a chance that both he or Derek or any of those players could come back once they have a coach in place later in the offseason, depending on where things shake out. But I would certainly expect that both Sanch and Derek Etienne will have other contracts long before then. They will be high on people's lists when free agency opens in a little less than 2 weeks. Derek, again, was a salary cap thing. He set career highs in goals and assists this year. He had 9 goals, which was second on the team. And they were only paying him, I think, $175,000. So that is someone who's in line for a big, big, big raise that the crew aren't willing to give him necessarily. He said, Bez said, you know, they're going to keep talking to Derek's agent and see where things go, but they're pretty far apart right now. And they're looking to get more consistency at the winger position. And while Derek obviously was very, very good, he also could be inconsistent. So that's something that they're looking to try to upgrade if they can.
Yeah, maybe just you can come back on our terms if you want.
Yeah.
He's going to go see what's out there as well.
He's going to go see what's out there. He'll probably, I'm sure someone will pay him more than the crew want to. But sure. If he's still floating around out there, there's very much a chance that he could come back.
Okay. The league awards are all out by now. And Hanny Mukhtar of Nashville, to little surprise, is the MVP. Comeback player of the year is Gonzalo Higuain of Miami. Coach of the year, Jim Curtin of Philly. Perfect. Defender of the year is Jakub Glesnes of Philadelphia, and goalkeeper of the year, obviously Andre Blake, easily the best keeper in the world. And totally. There were times during these playoffs where it's like, he's a bad boy.
I just think about the New York City game in the semifinal where New York City took that lead and he made a save immediately after. Otherwise, it would have been 2-0, and then, you know, it's not game over, but, you know, very much could have been. And then Philly comes right back and scores 3 unanswered.
He looked like Trey Jack on that one. It was unbelievable. Young player of the year, Jesus Ferreira of Dallas with 18 goals. He's currently in camp with the MLS USMNT players in Frisco, Texas, as they prepare to fly to Qatar and very soon. And the newcomer of the year, Thiago Almada of Atlanta, and Cucho Hernandez second. And, you know, you look at the voting, and
it's very interesting, the voting totals.
Well, you know, it's also, yeah, well, let's look at the voting totals first before I get cranky. You know, they do a vote of players, coaches, and media, and it came down to the players voted Almada by a slight percentage. The media voted Cucho Hernandez by a large percentage. And then the vote swung on the club's vote, the technical staff's vote, I guess. And that was 19.1% for Almada and 6.4% for Cucho Hernandez. And, you know, the media was a flip of that. It was 10.6 Almada among the media and 21.1%. And so, when I look at that, what I think is, of all the ways the league has grown up and become a real soccer league, you know, and it's had to grow up a lot, there are still these fault lines where you look at the voting and you go, well, where's the vote count? They just throw percentages up. So basically, I mean, Cucho got suspended late in the season he did tail off. He had 8 goals in 8 games and he finished with what, 9?
He finished with 9, yeah. So he did definitely tail off down the stretch.
I think that's more than Almada had over the course of the whole season. But point here is that they just threw some numbers with percentage signs on the end of it and said Almada won, and you have no idea.
You have no idea. And it's also because they do it, you know,
they
take the votes from, you know, people just vote. I did not have a ballot this year because I came into the league so late. My understanding is, you know, you can vote for any player in the league that you feel fits that criteria. So then you see the percentages and you note, oh, those don't add up to 100%, because they just vote on a wide swath of players. And then the top 3 in that voting are considered the finalists, and there's not like a second vote on the finalists or anything. It would be interesting. I think that's how most leagues do it, but it would be interesting to see, you know, if they had just given those 3 finalists and then people voted again, how the voting totals might've been different. I also just think it's interesting. You see the percentages and you think 6.4% of the clubs voted for Cucho.
The club's technical staffs is what it's.
So that's probably, is that one?
No, that's something they made up. So the guy could win the award.
I think it works out to 2 of the. No, that's not right. Math is hard.
Well, what do they mean by technical staffs? I mean,
they probably leave it wide, I would guess. You know, some teams probably have their coach wants to vote. Some teams, their GM wants to vote. I don't know. That's your point. It's kind of a mystery.
You know, I don't want to chirp too much about this. It's just the process sucks, number one. And number two, if Cucho didn't hurt himself with a suspension for a homophobic slur uttered in a game.
Yes.
And if he didn't tail off in goal scoring, which wasn't his fault, I don't think it was.
No, I don't think it was. He was still creating, I would say, on the eye test, the same number of chances and vehemently trying to get his teammates to do the things he needed them to do.
Well, it was the system's fault, is the way I'd put it, to put it succinctly. And now they're trying to change the system. So, all right, that's enough with that. So there was a report that on Halloween night. So that Inter Miami is definitely going to sign Lionel Messi.
There was a report that they are close on that. Wouldn't that be something?
Now, if they sign Messi, if I'm Bez, I know who I want to back up Cucho. I'm going right after Gonzalo. You know, if I can get him, I mean, I don't know. He loves it down there and stuff, and his brother's down there.
He's retiring, so.
Oh, well, no. I'd get him out of retirement and his brother, you know, let him back up Cucho and Zella Ryan. Anyway, I just throw that out there just for fun. Anyway, Lionel Messi coming to MLS is a big deal, even after all these years, after Beckham.
It would be a massive, massive deal. We'll see, you know.
Okay. And there was a little crew news as well this week, Bailey.
There was a little crew news on Alex.
A nugget
of crew news. A little vague whisper of some crew news on Alex Matan, who's currently on loan to Rapid Bucuresti, I think is how you might say that, in his native Romania. He went on loan in the summer with a loan term through the end of this year. There was a first report on, it's the third now, and the report was on the first, so that would have been Tuesday. That he was going to be coming back to the crew at the end of the calendar year to join them for preseason training in January. And then yesterday, the president of Rapid Bucuresti said that they are negotiating to have his loan extend through the end of their league year, which would be through next summer. That's in line with what the crew believed to be a possibility. I think they're having those conversations now. I would kind of not be surprised either way if they agree to that or don't. I know they are looking to get Matan back in the fold at some point, but leaving him over there through the summer is something I think they would be open to.
Yeah, he was one of the guys I think you can throw Yaboa, not to crack on these, but the perception is, given their play, Matan in particular, like, where was he? That mistake signings might be an overstatement, but they threw some money around there, and so far it hasn't paid off.
Yeah, Matan is a little bit of an interesting situation since he's on the U22 initiative, so he doesn't count majorly against the salary budget. So bringing him back in, you know, could be worth it. I know they're interested in his ability in the box to try to get them to create more in there, because one of the things they're really focused on is they feel they took way too many shots from outside the box this year. So trying to get more plays inside the box, and they think Matan can help them do that. So we'll see if he's back in January or if he's back in the summer. Either way, obviously, I would not expect Bucuresti to buy at the end of the loan. So it's just a question of if it gets extended by a few months or if he is back here in January.
Okay. Is there, you had written a story, now it's, I think it's probably sometime in mid-October, about prospects, candidates,
yes,
that could be on the, and that list is going to keep morphing. But what can you tell us about, as I recall, we went over a few of them.
We went over a few of them, but I hadn't written the list yet, actually, when we did this last.
You expanded the list and began the speculative ball rolling downhill here.
I had, and I can kind of update this on the fly now, as we know that the crew are not deep into their process, but have defined their criteria and have begun interviewing candidates. So some of the people that I threw out on the initial list who are still with their World Cup teams and stuff, because that was presented originally as something they might be open to as the timeline stretched into mid-December to make a hire. So that left it open that maybe someone who, you know, gets dropped out in the group stage could be a candidate. Now that we know that they're into their interview process, I would say that's much less likely since it's early November. And it seems like their timeline has maybe accelerated a little bit.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it sounded to me when I talked to Tim Bezbachenko late last week that or sometime last week that it sounded like he didn't put it in these words, but he seemed to indicate that it would be, the process could be wrapped up by Thanksgiving.
Yeah. And originally their timeline was mid-December, so moved up by a couple weeks. But just to go through these candidates that are still kind of in consideration, I would say LA Galaxy assistant Jason Bent is definitely in consideration. This is all just my thought process, but I think someone, Bez really emphasized when he spoke about what they're looking for, that they really want a coach who understands alignment from top to bottom, because he feels that that is a way the crew can find a competitive advantage. So understanding the role with the first team, with the second team, with the academy, and having the club work together as an overall structure and not
integrated. Yes.
Yes. Integrated structure and not being disjointed. And Jason Bent ran the TFC Academy. He coached Toronto FC 2 when Bez was there. He has now been an MLS assistant for the last four seasons. So someone that on paper checks a lot of the boxes, has history with Bez. I think that's someone that, you know, certainly a lot of the external eyes have turned to say could very much be a candidate. We talked last time about Laurent Courtois being a candidate, and Bez did confirm that they were going to talk to him. I know he's been leading their training sessions that they had for a couple of weeks after the season ended, and the players said unanimously positive things about that experience. I got to watch one morning, and it seemed like they were having a lot of fun out there. Definitely, right. But there was a lightness to it, and I think that's what Laurent brings.
Love the way he plays the game.
Love the way he plays the game. I do think a knock against him is the fact that he's never coached at the senior team level at all. So we'll see on that. Other candidates include Wilfred Nancy, the current coach of Montreal, which there was some discussion about around a week or so ago.
And that might have been, as much as anything, people just connecting the dots.
Correct.
There was some rumors or reports of a rift developing between Nancy, who has an option year that can be picked up left on his contract, and Montreal, and it had to do presumably with players they're about to sell and what the constitution of the team is going to look like next thing. Now, Bez is very careful about Wilfred Nancy and like Robin Fraser, who's under contract with Colorado. He's not saying anything about those guys.
Totally.
Because the tampering charges, where you don't want that rep in any league, and that's serious business.
Exactly. But it started to, I heard a couple things about the Crew maybe having reached out to his agent. There was a report from Tom Bogert that the Crew were interested, which, like you said, I think is them just connecting the dots. But he did also add that the option year that had kind of been a mystery was automatically triggered by Montreal making the playoffs. Uh-huh. So then that created some additional sort of questioning that at that point it would mean that the Crew, if they were talking to him, would have to get Montreal's permission. And if they did hire him, would have to compensate Montreal for that.
I'm sure they have to go. They're going through back channels there or whatever. Whatever.
Definitely.
Whatever the sub Rosa process is, they're beneath the Rose going through the process, because he'd be an excellent candidate.
He would be an excellent, excellent candidate. The Crew, I mean, I think it is one of the best jobs that's going to come open in MLS.
Right. We've talked about that.
But, you know, they believe really heavily in the core of their team, which kind of ties into the decisions that they made with their roster. They wanted to keep a lot of the key pieces in place because they believe in them. They're trying to open up some space for young players they believe in, like Will Sands, like Jason Russell Rowe, to be that backup striker to Cucho Hernandez. Maybe, depending on the coach, play alongside Cucho Hernandez if they're going with a two-striker situation.
They're talking about that out loud.
They are talking about that
two
out
loud. Two up top, which is cool.
It is cool. It would be cool.
And who else is floating around out there in the world of speculation?
Yeah, like you mentioned, Robin Fraser, the coach at Colorado. Again, something that they're not going to talk about out loud. But if he were looking to make a move within MLS, the Crew, I think, would be considered a step up as far as the facilities, the roster, the ownership support they have. Those are kind of the names that I have on my mind right now.
Yeah, it might be an outlier, but we'll see. I know it's a very involved process. Bezpečenko, you can look up a column that I did on the subject at dispatch.com. Click on sports, click on Crew, and you'll find all of Billy's excellent stuff and my middling missives. And among those are a piece I did on the process that they're in right now. And it's he described three distinct stages they're looking for. Obviously, they're looking for, they're vetting character. They're looking at MLS experience and or knowledge of the league. So that was interestingly put by the general manager, because it doesn't necessarily mean you have to have NBA MLS experience. It means you have to have a good working knowledge of the league. So he called it a global search again, which he's wanted to do. And things are always changing out there on the globe with the search. And then he talked about the integration, about how the next coach is going to have to understand how they're integrating everything from the academy up through Crew 2 into the big team, and how the coaches are going to be one big happy family in this process.
Yeah, it almost hinted to me, I was thinking about this the other day, you know, Philadelphia has gotten so much praise for their model with the way they're so integrated, and also the way they have really applied very strict player profiles analytically and stuff when they're looking at players to get. And Bez mentioned that when he spoke to us last week as well. So it would be interesting to see if they are trying. It seems like they are, you know, seeing what Philadelphia has done so successfully and certainly taking some cues from that as far as ways to strengthen their position in the league.
A good way to put it. Well, anything else going on? We're going to get to see some World Cup stuff probably next week. This morning I spoke with Greg Berhalter, the coach of the national team. He's not as worried about the injuries. There's a lot of guys that have pulls, strains, soft tissue things going on in Europe, and he didn't sound as concerned about it as some other USMNT watchers might be. So
that's good to hear.
Well, yeah, he's so anyway. We'll go over some of that stuff as the U.S. prepares to head to Qatar. First game is on the 21st.
First game is on the 21st. Just really quickly wanted to throw in, since you mentioned earlier the men's national team training they're doing in Frisco right now. Crew midfielder Aiden Morris is with the youth national team, also training.
Yeah, the U-20
team. He's with
the
U-20
team.
They're training there. He's with them. He is not eligible for the World Championships or whatever they call it that's coming up, but he would be eligible for the 2024 Olympic team. So that's a potential thing that might happen one day. So just throwing that out there.
Right.
Good for him.
Yeah, the U-20s are there to give him teams to play scrimmage to scrimmage.
Yeah, so Aiden's down there and could potentially in a year and a half or so play at the Olympics, which would be pretty cool.
Yeah, he's a good player. He's a good player.
He's a good player.
And the U.S. needs Aiden Morris in the Olympics to qualify. Please qualify. It's been a little while here, folks. Anyway, we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for joining us for Bailey Johnson. Kyle is wrapped up in management meetings, and which he adores greatly. And for Patrick Flaherty, I'm Mike Arace. We'll talk again soon. Patrick, kick us out of here.